And a happy coronation weekend to you, Peter Lynham.
Thank you, thank you. Did you enjoy your coronation weekend, Johnny?
Peter, I basically, somehow I must have lived under a rock over the weekend, and I missed everything yes. until I had a look at Instagram on Sunday, and I saw they put up a photo gallery, and I was like, wait a minute, something's going on in London?
Yes.
Old London town, yeah.
Yeah. Now, Peter, give us your hot takes, and how does it tie into a spiritual realm?
Yeah. Well, my goodness, was it ever a religious ceremony? I mean, I was enormously struck by the thing that, and this, the coronation is a church service, you know, and it's in essence, and almost every part of it was entirely religious in the framework. It was bishops and archbishops of the Church of England who ran the whole show. It was extraordinarily loaded with prayers and with symbolism. But the most interesting bit, Corey, did you see it?
Yeah, I did. And there's one part that gets me because you had, like, what, six lads come out with these big screens to cover up one portion of the whole program. And apparently it was holy oil being applied to the new king. What's that? What is that all
okay.
about?
So this is really interesting. In Elizabeth II's case, in his mother's case, there was a sort of a tent put up over her, and the sides didn't go all the way down. So while you couldn't pick up anything from TV, presumably those in the Abbey could see what was going on. But in this case, there were little walls held in place. Beautiful walls, didn't you think? They were most beautifully, I don't know what they were covered with, sort of brocade of some description, open to the altar, but closed off to any other prying eyes than God's eyes, I presume. Although God ought to be able to see through walls, I would have thought.
he would have had a special seat, right?
Yes, yeah, well, very much so. But the key thing of what was going on was this was making the king a sacred king.
Right.
And this is the interesting thing, because the whole idea of anointing comes from the Old Testament, where the priests of, in the Aaronic priesthood, so those are the priests who are the sons of Levi, and were chosen to be the priest, they had the tips of their body anointed to express that the Spirit would fill them now in every bit for what the tasks that they had to perform. So anointing means that it's this person is consecrated to God. And the consecration is entirely God's business. And also, I mean, oil does spread in a rather yucky sort of way over bits of your body. and so I presume there was a bit of cleaning up afterwards that took place. Although there was a debate in the household I was at as to whether he was a bit shiny for the rest of the ceremony. I didn't see the shininess, but the other two, it was worth.
I mean, oil does plenty of miracles.
That's right. Yeah. So, I mean, what was interesting, it was preceded by the hymn sung in plain song about the anointing spirit being present, which is the hymn always used when people are made bishops and priests in the Catholic and Anglican traditions. And so it was a lavish ceremony of creating a sacred monarchy. And this is, it does seem absolutely astonishing in today's world.
Yes, I mean, in your opinion, is the royal family of the modern era deeply religious?
No, certainly not the current ones. I think Elizabeth was, but certainly not the monarchy. Mind you, has the monarchy ever been particularly religious?
Yes.
The ceremony was important in kind of affirming the link between kings and priests in the ancient world. And there would be plenty of tussles between archbishops and kings that go on in English history. And yet all those kings were ordained in some sort of fashion like this. They were consecrated king. But it didn't make them any more holy, of course. So the rituals, I think, were seen historically as a way that made people obedient to the king.
Mm.
But if it meant that they would therefore become compliant and helpful to the church, not necessarily.
Mm. Now, what was the point of it in the modern era, having this deeply religious ceremony if there's not necessarily that connection there?
But this is the puzzling thing, because you can argue that what's happened is it's a mistake that something should have been done about this long, long ago. But to actually do it, you would need to change some fundamental aspects of the unwritten English Constitution, because you would have to separate the church from the state. Mm. The kings would have to stop appointing the bishops. And because at the very heart lies what was agreed in 1689, the coronation oath. And the coronation oath is where the king swears fidelity to maintain the Protestant religion and the Church of England and its bishops. And that took place before the magic stuff took place with the oils. And, of course, that's the bit that is pretty outrageous in the contemporary world, where essentially nobody except Anglicans accepts the notion that there should be some special privilege attached to the Anglican Church. And even a lot of Anglicans are pretty dubious about this, and certainly don't believe it as conveying some particular power. But it places them in a very privileged position.
Mm.
So I find the whole thing very anachronistic. And the strange thing is that almost all... I'm trying to think of who would be Catholic monarchs. Mm. And the only one I can think of is Spain, which has a monarchy of a sort that was restored, you know, in the 1970s.
Mm.
And I meant to do some investigations of whether they have a coronation, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if they didn't have a coronation, because in a way, this ancient ritual, you'd think, was just pure Catholicism in the old style, where church claimed the power over the state. And it seems this is a Protestant world where they've asserted individual freedoms and the freedom to think and be what you want to be, and it doesn't seem like that at all in that ceremony.
Yeah, it's quite big and pompous for what it is, isn't it?
Oh, extraordinarily pompous. And, you know, while we'd been promised a reformed ceremony, the reforms were very, very minor. There was some modernizing of some, but not all of the language. They brought in the various spiritual leaders to present some of those gadgets that the kings get to not use, but to hold for a while.
Peter, just a quick question via the text machine. Someone's saying, was the holy oil from Jerusalem? Also, he be sacred if he's been divorced?
Well, in the ancient world, most certainly not. And in Catholicism, it would be impossible.
Yeah.
But the Church of England is an independent state, and it can do what it wants to.
Yeah, because
after all,
it's been
the very first Anglican
history, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, the very first monarch was Henry VIII, who had a number of wives, you might recall,
yes,
in the story.
Yeah.
So divorce is not a fundamental obstacle to monarchy. And indeed, I think grandness of coronation is kind of like a statement against the claim that you've got no right to be king.
Mm.
So the grander the ceremony, the more it should act as a kind of counter-propaganda to those who say, is this a man fit to be king?
Well, now, Peter, what was the exorbitant amount of cash thrown at this ceremony a good use of money when there are people in poverty in the UK?
I think it was $150 million US dollars, I think, last time I checked.
Well, so long as you accept that ceremonies have a place, this is the most brilliant piece of propaganda for Britain.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, they've got... Well, look at the people assembled. You even, you know, had our own Prime Minister saying what a, you know, while he's essentially a Republican, really he's got nothing against this king and wants to raise the subject of us becoming a republic now.
Yes.
I mean, it's surprising how ceremonies have the ability to take away all the intellectual questions that you may have about something.
Yes, yeah. Just get eyes on the prize.
That's
like,
right.
Ritual. And we're talking about it, aren't we? We're like, yeah.
That's right. Yes, yes. So the magic has been done on us, and we've fallen for it.
Yes.
Do you reckon we can just have coronations take place at some random pub, you reckon?
Putting on the hat?
Yeah.
No,
If everything that was taking place in that church took place in some random pub, do you think it'd be more accessible to the public, maybe?
No, and I think one of the interesting things that's in my mind is the other state-established churches in Europe. So they're the Scandinavian states and, you know, Denmark, Holland and the like.
Mm.
In the last few years, they've all been gradually disestablishing their state churches. That means to say that the church and the state become separate from each other, more obviously. And I suspect that what you're left with then is you've got no basis for a coronation, because where would you hold it?
Right.
You see? There's no... The great thing about what this has done is this Westminster Abbey right next door to the Palace of Westminster, it's just loaded with connections. Who is going to conduct the coronation, you see? Who has got the right to carry out the ritual? When you compare this with an American inauguration, it's what have you got? The swearing of the oath by the Chief Justice. I mean, it's a very bland ceremony when it comes to that, to it.
Yes. Okay.
So, there were other little bits that have been added along the way. For example, the Church of Scotland giving the copy of the Bible to the king, and him being told that he had to live by this law and read this book and et cetera, et cetera. And this is picked up, I might say, again from the Old Testament. And it was interesting, it's handed over by the Church of Scotland, which is kind of more attached to the Bible than Anglicans in some ways, because they don't have bishops and archbishops. They just have a moderator elected every year.
Mm-hmm.
So being handed the Bible by... Because he is already in a... The Presbyterian Church is a sort of a state church also, though in not quite as direct a way. The king doesn't have such strong authority in it. And something very interesting is that all of these ideas happened when the Maori kings were first set apart when the kingitanga was created, which makes that, you know, stupid faux pas by Phil Goff on a couple of days before the ceremony. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm.
Where, you know, Phil Goff failed to use the karakia and then made this silly statement that none of you have ever seen a coronation.
Yes.
See, the coronation in kingitanga was very much modelled on the Old Testament notions of kings and priests and prophets as well. Not in quite the same detail of ceremony, but equally taking a framework from the Old Testament and creating a sacredness attached to monarchy. So monarchy kind of needs a mystic aura around it to exist.
Yes, yes, yes. Makes sense, Peter.
Yeah.
I love a mystic aura. Man, that is... I guess it's...
Well,
that ties into the spirituality, doesn't it?
Mm.
Yes, it does. Oh, yes. It does.
Yeah.
It does. And it makes us wonder, you know, in our world, we don't quite know in New Zealand how to do ceremonies well, and we still use the churches quite a bit.
Yes. Yeah.
As a kind of substitute for that, and yet we're always slightly apologetic because we're not sure that should be the case.
Mm-hmm. But we need that. Mm. We sort of need.
But you kind of need to invent a state religion.
Yes. Yeah.
And then you hate it.
Yeah. Hey, Peter Lynham, thank you so much for another great edition of That's the Spirit. We'll look forward to speaking with you next Monday.
Thanks, sir.
Cheers, see mate. You. Bye. Corey,